I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Western Carolina University political science professor Chris Cooper.
It's great to be here, Matt.
Thank you for coming in. You've had a chance to look at the maps. How will they affect the political power in North Carolina if these are the maps that end up being okayed for next year's election?
Right. If these are the final maps, I don't think we're going to be looking at huge changes, right? So we're creating a few open seats. We are double bunking a few legislators, mostly Republican legislators. I think this is a small victory for the Democrats, but certainly not a large one. And this certainly will not lead to the Republicans losing the majority.
Double bunking is a term we've heard about these maps. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So if right now I'm representing District 1 and Matt's representing District 2, and then we redraw the line, so we're now representing the same district, and we have to then run against each other in the next election. So only one of us is going to come out of that battle.
And here in Western North Carolina, how much have the districts changed, if at all? Because a lot of the gerrymandering questions, at least at the state level, were really in other areas of North Carolina.
So there were 28 districts that were ruled unconstitutional. These were all ruled unconstitutional based on race, right? So the court has not touched partisanship here. And so that is centered kind of where you would imagine it would, mostly around urban areas in the middle of the state, places with larger African-American populations. And for that reason, most of the affected districts are actually represented by African-American Democrats.
Democrats' big goal for next year, and Roy Cooper, the governor's big goal, is to break the supermajorities that the Republicans have in both chambers of the General Assembly, basically allow them to override any of the governor's vetoes. Will these new maps allow Democrats to reach that goal?
I think it makes it a little bit more likely. This is certainly not a slam dunk for the Democrats. It's not a slam dunk for the Republicans to hold on to it. I think this is going to be a slight movement towards the Democratic side. Whether it will be enough to make that difference or not, you know, I don't think we know quite yet.
You mentioned that when the Supreme Court ruled these current districts unconstitutional was based on race. Mm-hmm. These maps were supposedly drawn to protect incumbents and was basically based on partisanship. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the court, there's sort of a few different ways these cases get legislated. One is by race. And the court has been pretty consistent. They say, hey, look, you cannot draw lines with race as the predominant factor. That's what's at stake here, and that's why these were ruled unconstitutional. So there are some cases out there, like the Wisconsin case, where the court has said, hey, you can't really draw lines with partisanship as the predominant rule. That case is still going to be heard and decided by the Supreme Court. So right now we're in a place where the North Carolina General Assembly had to redraw the lines. They had to do something about race, but the court was essentially agnostic as to partisanship. And the Republicans have been pretty open about this. The consultant they paid to help them with the map is a Republican consultant who's been paid by Republican groups. And the Republicans were allowed to draw these maps to essentially benefit themselves.
One of the arguments has been always that you can base it on partisanship but not race. But if you look at the racial makeup of political parties, or at least in political affiliations, majority of African Americans, well over 90%, are Democrats. So even if you're still basing it on partisanship, isn't there still a way that could be said that it's still being based on race?
Yeah, that's why this is such a confusing and confounding issue in a lot of ways, right? Over 90% of African Americans do vote with the Democratic Party. So if we say, hey, you can't draw based on race, then it's going to have some partisan consequences. So the trick for the Republicans is to satisfy the court on race, but still protect what is an overwhelming Republican supermajority. The measures we have of this, we call this thing the efficiency gap, which is kind of a wonky term that means how much does one party get favored. And the early scores on the efficiency gap for this plan suggest that it is still a heavily Republican plan.
Another thing that fits into this is the amount of people who are not registered either Democrat or Republican in North Carolina. It's a very substantial number of people in the state as compared to others. You've been looking at how they're allowed to choose a primary to vote in, either Democrat or Republican, how that has changed over the years, just really in the past decade. Mm-hmm. Talk about that and how that plays into how these new districts are drawn.
Yeah, this is sort of the data wonks. This is kind of the most vexing problem of North Carolina politics, is that the largest growing group is not Democrat or Republican. It is actually unaffiliated. So right now in North Carolina, we have more Democrats than Republicans, and then Republicans and unaffiliated are at about the same number. And so the Democrats have to vote in the Democratic primary, Republicans vote in the Republican primary, unaffiliateds get to choose your own adventure. And so in 2008, About three quarters of the unaffiliated voters in North Carolina voted in the Democratic primary. Okay, so that's sort of one I would call noisy indicator that, hey, maybe in 2008, the unaffiliated voters were leaning towards the Democrats. That flipped 2 years later in pretty dramatic fashion, right? So you cut it 2010, and over half of the unaffiliated voters chose the Republican primary. We see very similar patterns in 2012, 2014, 2016. What that means altogether, I think, is that in 2008, the unaffiliated voters in North Carolina went for the Democrats, and moving forward, the Republicans did a better job of grabbing that growing number of folks.
And last question, just to from what you can tell, why is the number of people wanting to be unaffiliated growing so much, and why have Republicans been better at securing the votes of those people who are saying they're unaffiliated as opposed to Democrats?
Yeah, so I think there's a few reasons why. One, I think in general in this country, we say we don't like political parties. Now, most people still act like partisans. We call them shadow partisans in political science. But people like to say they don't like parties and don't vote with parties. So sort of socially, it feels good for people. You can look up anybody's party affiliation in North Carolina, and you can be a lot more popular at the cocktail parties if people don't know your party affiliation. So I think that's part of it. And the other thing that's going on is that a lot of these unaffiliated voters aren't necessarily people changing, but they're newcomers to the state, right? So if you move here from Maryland and you've got to decide which party to choose, you might say, well, why do I need to choose a party at all if I can choose the primary if I'm unaffiliated? So in some ways, it's a really rational thing for people to do. As to why the Republicans have done so much better lately or why the Democrats did so well in 2008, I think obviously Barack Obama has a lot to do with that. I think it's also a little bit about the migration patterns around 2008. Tended to be around the Cary area. These were a lot of folks who were moving here from up north who might have had a little bit more liberal tendencies. And I think you've seen slightly different migration patterns over the last few years.
Chris Cooper, thanks for coming in.
It was a pleasure as always.